Good afternoon. Welcome to the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources.
I'm with you.
For Tuesday, May 24th, and I just want to let folks know that we are going to do our work sessions first because at the end of the committee we may start losing folks, so I want to make sure that we get our business done first. What we posted is three bills for a work session. We'll go right into those work sessions, and then we will do House Bill 3591A first, and then House Bill 3280A after that, and then the rest of the agenda. Anything that we don't do today, we will hold over. Any work sessions we don't do today, we will hold over till Thursday, and I'll make sure and announce that towards the end. So with that, I will open up a work session on House Bill 2439, and do you need a script?
We're not going to amend it or do anything.
Senator? Nope.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2439 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Olson moves House Bill 2439 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Beth, do you want to just give a brief reminder to the committee on this bill that we heard?
Madam Chair, members, this is the bill that would increase damages for taking certain game mammals from $800 to $1,000. You heard it on May 5th. No revenue impact, minimal fiscal, no statement issued.
Okay, so there's a motion on the table. Any discussion on House Bill 2439? Okay. Clerk will call the roll, please.
Senator House?
Aye.
Senator
Zonsky?
Aye.
Senator Thompson?
Aye.
Senator Olson?
Aye.
Senator
Aye. Motion carries. And do we have any volunteers to... Senator Thompson, would you like to carry this bill?
Sure.
That sounded really enthusiastic, but
the vice chair,
friend and I were fighting over it.
I could tell. I thought you'd have to arm wrestle.
I could tell.
I'll be glad to do that. That's okay. We'll do the next one.
Okay. So, Senator Thompson, was that an affirmative?
Not really.
Oh.
That's okay. He'll do a great job.
Yeah.
Actually, I was going to carry the next one, Senator, so maybe
that's fine.
Yeah.
That's assuming it would pass.
Yeah, that is. Okay,
know?
I think I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2439. We have a carrier, Senator Thompson, and we will move on to the next work session. Open up a work session on House Bill 2838A, and Beth, why don't you remind the committee, and then we'll take a motion.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is the shark fin bill. You heard it on May 19th, just last week. There is a Dash A6 amendment, which was discussed at the hearing. Minimal fiscal impact, so no statement was issued, no revenue impact.
Okay. I will accept a motion, Senator, and for the amendment first.
We have to do this amendment first?
Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the amendment of 2838.
Okay, and that is the Dash A6.
Dash A6.
In front of
dated 5/19/11.
Okay, thank you. Senator Olson moves to adopt the Dash A6 amendments dated 5/19/2011. Any discussion about the amendment? Okay, any objection? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted. Take another motion.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2838-A6 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Olson moves House Bill 2838 as amended with the Dash A6 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion on this bill? I just wanted to thank Representative Witt, who I'm sure is watching on the TV, for bringing this bill forward, and I think this is a very important bill. I am hoping that it'll pass overwhelmingly on the Senate floor, because I do think it is a practice that of shark finning that we do not want to promote in the state, and make sure that we are not possessing. That's the focus of this bill, and making sure that folks are also legal in their fishing practices. So glad we're also added that with the Dash A6 amendments. The clerk will call the roll, please.
Senator House?
Aye.
Senator
Zonsky?
Aye.
Senator Thompson?
Aye.
Senator
Olson?
Aye.
Senator Mayfelder?
Aye.
That the motion carries. And Senator Przanski, would you like to carry this bill?
It makes no difference, Madam Chair. I wouldn't want us to carry a bill that you wanted to carry.
No, I have a feeling I'll be carrying the next bill, so I'll go ahead and let you take on sharks.
I'll take the
pens. I'll throw you to the sharks on this one.
All
right. Okay, with that, I'll close the work session on House Bill 2838, and we'll open up our last work session, which is House Bill 2983A. And Beth?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2983A was heard by the committee on May 19th. This is the bill that would eliminate the fee for the renewal of certain in-stream water right leases. There is a fiscal statement that was issued that you should have in your packet, as well as a letter from co-speaker Hannah, which discusses the proposed amendment, which was talked about at the hearing on the 19th, the A5 amendment.
Okay. All right. I will take a motion on that.
You need to pass the amendment?
Yeah.
Madam Chair, I move to adopt the A5 amendment dated 5/17/11.
Okay, Senator Olson moves the dash A5 amendments, and those are dated. In front of me, 5/7/2011. Any discussions? Senator Thompson.
This is what we talked about earlier. On,
correct. Yeah. So this amendment, what this amendment does, and I think Beth talked about it, it keeps what is in current rule, which is the 5-year limit in the rule.
Right, but it changes the bill that was voted on in the House.
Right.
And I think for clarity reasons, the bill that passed on the House was a good bill. It sets up a pretty good system with in-stream water right, moves water around to where we're using it in the correct times of the season. I just believe that this amendment, by taking out the clarity of the 5-year thing, leaves that open in the future to change that, and I think it's just important that the 5-year system that's set up now is also set up with forfeiture rules based on 5 years. If you don't use it, you lose it. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I think that conformity, if we lose that, it might throw things off in the future. So I won't be supporting the amendment.
Okay. All right, so noted for the record. But the motion carries. The dash A5s are adopted. And then I'll take another motion, please.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2983 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Senator Olson moves House Bill 2983 as amended with the dash A5s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Yes. To the amendment, we have eliminated the 5-year.
You know what? The 5 years in rule.
In rule.
It is in rule, and it has been in rule for since 19. I think we said 80.
1990. Let's see. We're up to five. This is the letter from the department since 1994.
It's been in rule since 1994.
No, I'm sorry. In 2001, the commission increased the maximum term from 2 to 5 years in rule.
So it's been since 2001. This does not change the rule. It stays 5 years in the rule. This goes back to the original way that the program's been run. It keeps the split leasing, and it also keeps the reduction in fees, which was the big part of the bill that I believe why it was sent over to us in the first place. That does not change that.
That's right.
Yep. So can I, Senator Thompson, are you don't like the amendment? Is that
no,
what I understood?
I think it just creates a issue that could be changed. They can go change the rule if they want to, and this puts it in statute. It passed on the House overwhelmingly, and this is a great compromise bill, and then we're going to change it and send it back for concurrence, and it might not get concurred. So that's just my opinion.
Okay.
Clerk will call the roll, please.
Aye.
Aye.
No.
No.
Aye. So with that, the motion carries, and I will carry the bill. Okay, we will close the work session on House Bill 2983A, and we'll go ahead and open up a public hearing on House Bill 3591A, and Beth, if you can read the bill, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3591A would direct the Department of Environmental Quality to protect human health and ecosystem health while minimizing negative economic impacts on the state's economy through meeting conditions and variances when administering the MPDES permit program of the Federal Clean Water Act. There's a minimal fiscal impact, so no statement was issued, no revenue impact. Conger is here.
Yes, and Representative Conger, would you like to come up? Thank you for your patience. See, getting our work out of the way.
Madam Chair, thank you for hearing this bill, members of the committee. I'm Jason Conger, representing District 54 in the Oregon House. And I do appreciate you taking some time to hopefully work this bill. It's the result of kind of a long process, so I'll give a quick overview of the background. I think you may hear more from other folks who are signed up as well, but just the quick overview is that our Oregon Department of Environmental Quality is in the final stages of publishing rules related to its enforcement of the Federal Water Pollution Control Act, and we heard testimony on the House side that the rules are extraordinarily stringent in terms of water quality. And when I say extraordinarily, we heard that they are at least 10 times as stringent as the water quality standards in the next most high standard state. So they are a real significant leap up. And there was a lot of concern about the effect of this new rule on the economy. There was also a lot of discussion about whether or not the science behind the water, the new standard and the rules that DEQ is in the process of writing was valid. This bill doesn't deal with that at all. Basically, what House Bill 3591 does, actually, it was fully summarized by your staff. This bill seeks to protect human health and ecosystem health, but at the same time, minimize the economic effects of doing so. And really, it only has three requirements, and they are very simple. It requires, while complying with federal law, requires DEQ to seek to minimize negative economic impacts of an applicant for a variance to the new standards. So that's requirement number one. Requirement number two is to ensure that the conditions, if there are any conditions included in the variance, are related specifically to the purpose of the application. And the idea there is that you wouldn't have a variance being conditioned on off-site things that have nothing to do with water quality. And then the third requirement is almost ancillary, but it does require DEQ to come back and report to the next legislature by February 15th, 2013, regarding this variance process. So implicit in all of this, or maybe explicit, is the idea that nobody's going to be able to comply with these water quality standards right away. It's going to take time. I think everybody understands that. And so the expectation is that municipalities, other point source dischargers in particular, will seek a variance to the requirements. So they will come to DEQ, they will apply for a variance to the requirements, put themselves on a plan to come into compliance at some point in the future. And so in this variance process, we're injecting these additional requirements, mainly to minimize the economic impact. So the DEQ knows that the legislature, that our intent, our desire, is that that they comply with federal law, but in doing so, that they minimize the negative the cost, really. And again, I want to mention just quickly the sorts of point source dischargers who will be primarily impacted by this are probably municipalities. The biggest number will be municipalities all over the state. Others, of course, would be dischargers who have discharge permits into the waters of the state, which are the waters will be regulated by this new rule. So thanks again. I will conclude with that, and happy to answer any questions, or, again, I think there's a couple other people signed up behind me.
Great. Any questions from the representative before we let him get back to his business? All right. Thank you very much for coming over and introducing the bill. Okay, we have John Ledger, and I'm going to call you guys all up together. Chris Fick, is Chris in the room, and Bill Donovan. That's all of you signed up. Whoever wants to go first.
I'll go first, Madam Chairman, if I may. Madam Chairman, members of the committee, John Ledger, Associated Oregon Industries, thank you for hearing this bill. This bill has actually gone through quite a bit of some rewriting, and it's turned out to be, I think, supported by a broad consortium of people. I'm not aware of any opposition. And I wanted to thank the DEQ for working on this bill, and we're very appreciative of their support. And also I'd like to thank Phil Donovan here, working with the tribes. He's been very good to work with, didn't have to, and I appreciate it. I want to thank him publicly. As most of you know, the state is now getting new water quality standards, and they're going to be very stringent, probably the most stringent state standards in the nation. And this bill does not deal with those standards as far as affecting them. They're going to be in place. And one thing with state standards, if the state does not adopt them, EPA will. So they're going to be put in place. We see that as a given. And there are going to be a lot of dischargers that are not going to be able to comply just because they're so strict, in some cases extraordinarily low standards below background levels. And so to be in compliance with the law, these facilities or municipalities are going to need a permit with a variance in it. And the variance is not a free pass. In a way, it's a misnomer. It's really a conditional variance. And no one really knows what are going to be in these conditional variances. There are rules, state rules. There are federal rules where they have to comply. And, of course, the standards all stay in place. But the agent, you'll have to apply for a variance. Yeah, the agency will assess it, may issue you a variance, and then the variance goes up to Seattle, to Region 10, and Seattle can disapprove it, EPA. And if they do approve it and it goes into effect, it's only good for 5 years. And so, of course, the concern is from an industrial side, if you're thinking about expanding here or locating here, first of all, you're looking at a discharge permit that's going to be more stringent than probably anywhere else in the country. You're not sure if you're going to get a variance. You're not sure what the conditions will be. You're not sure if EPA will approve it. And then if they do, you start all over in 5 years. So that's a daunting thing. And DEQ, I think, has done a very good job at looking at tools to try to accommodate people so they can get into compliance. And this variance process is one of them. So this is an important piece of legislation. It is soft-worded. It says that the agency will seek to avoid negative economic impacts. We didn't want something that says they had to, something that tied their hands. This is a policy issue. And we think this will give some modicum of comfort to dischargers when they know this is the state policy. And we want to make sure that this people understand this bill was not meant in any way to be critical of the agency. The agency has been very good to work with on this. And this is something just we think will make things work a little bit more smooth as we go into the future, because this law, these rules will be in place for decades. So with that, thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Ledger.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, other members of the committee. I'm Chris Fick with the League of Oregon Cities. John did an excellent job summarizing the bill, so I'll just say this is a good bill, should pass. And while I haven't worked in the legislature often, I know that bipartisan water quality bills without opposition are a rare thing, so I'm hopeful, maybe naively hopeful, that this bill will come out of committee with your approval. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Dankfelder, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Phil Donovan. I'm here on behalf of the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla. I think, as many of you know, Oregon's fish consumption rate did not adequately represent Indian people. And we have been working for many years to bring about change, and this has been one of our highest priorities. Just so you all are clear and know, the fish consumption rate that's being established we view as being a compromise. We hold our own tribal government and our actions to a higher standard than that which is being implemented by DEQ. But having said that, we're fully supportive of moving forward, and we've been at the table for many years with the people that sit beside me. We looked at House Bill 3591, and we recognize that we support minimizing the economic impact to applicants where a variance is sought. We also want to know the number and type of variances that are being issued. So we think the content of this legislation is very good. And along those lines, when the bill was originally drafted, we felt like it was missing the recognition of the importance to public health. And so we worked with the drafters of the legislation, and we think that the legislation before you now reflects that important quality and not just about trying to minimize economic impacts. So we're supportive of House Bill 3591 and urge your adoption. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the panel?
Mr. Ledger, if the EPA gets to judge this variance and they don't allow them, do we have any remedy for our businesses?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, each variance will have to go up to Region 10 for approval or disapproval. And I cannot tell you off the top of my head what is the process for appealing that. There usually is an administrative process. I'm not familiar with it for a federal approval on that. The agency may know.
Thank you, follow up. So basically then we're still in the mud up to our knees. Are we going to have problems even if we pass this bill, or is this bill going to help us get over our problems?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, this is going to be tough. This is going to be very difficult. I mean, make no bones about it, especially on industrial jobs. This helps because it gives some direction and some comfort that this is the state policy. It doesn't change the standards. It wasn't meant to.
If I could jump in, Chair Dingfelder and Senator Olson, I think what this legislation does, it'll help elevate those issues to your attention, and we thought that it would be helpful for us to understand that information as well, and that's what makes this legislation good.
Okay, thank you.
Did you have a follow-up, Senator?
No.
Okay. All right. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you.
Anybody else would like to testify on this bill, on House Bill 3591A? Okay, seeing none, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3591A, and we will open up a public hearing on House Bill 3280A. And Beth, if you can walk us through the amendment. As you can see, we have a dash 10 amendment, which we do not have a fiscal or revenue statement for yet. Right.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3280 is the bill addressing wineries in the state. There is a dash A10 amendment in front of you. I believe there's going to be testimony from the folks that put the amendment together on the specific contents of the amendment, so maybe let them go through that.
Okay.
And as the chair stated, there is no fiscal impact or revenue impact statement available yet on the amendment.
Okay. Did Representative Holby want to come in? Or
I asked and I did not hear that.
Okay. Okay. So we don't see Representative Holby here, so we'll go ahead and call up the first line of folks, which is Sam Tannehill, Alex Sokol-Blosser, and Kara Olmo. And colleagues, you will recognize, you probably know there was another bill, Senate Bill 960, that had some winery issues in it, and so this is the same group of people who have been working together as a follow-up to that. So you may want to talk a little bit about that process. And you might have to move the mic over. And just a reminder, state your name for the record, please.
Sure.
Thank you.
Chair Dingfelder and members of the committee,
hey,
my name
it's
is
a hard
Sam
name.
Tannehill.
Get screwed up all the time.
For the record. I'm president of the Oregon Wine Growers Association, co-owner of A to Z Wineworks and Rex Hill Winer. I'd like to thank you all for hearing our amendment today. I'm here to ask the committee to amend HB 3280A with legislation developed by the Oregon wine industry that brings clarity to the kind of activities and events that are permitted at wineries on EFU land. The amendments we ask the committee to consider are the product of a year-long effort that has taken place since the passage of SB 1055 in 2010. The year-long efforts included, but were not limited to, an industry survey, regional town hall meetings, numerous communications, and many, many productive long meetings. I'm happy to report that we have forged an industry consensus that makes balanced and necessary changes to the winery siting statute. In many respects, our bill modernizes the winery siting statute, recognizing that Oregon's wine industry has grown and matured since we established permitted use wineries in 1989. With this growth, it is important that we find a way to balance the protection of farmland with the need for an appropriate level of commercial activities at wineries. This will allow wineries to be successful in Oregon, which helps bolster our economy and create jobs. We are the first to admit that this legislation does not have universal agreement. But as I'm coming to learn over the past several months, when does Oregon ever have universal agreement on land use policy? But we feel this legislation does strike the balance between those who don't want to see any commercial activities on farmland occur and those who would argue for unlimited events and commercial activities, especially at wineries. In our legislation, we have attempted to incorporate the policy views of industry and stakeholders, including the Governor's Office, the Oregon Farm Bureau, the Associated Oregon Counties, American Planning Association, 1,000 Friends of Oregon, and elected legislators. While we likely have not met the policy objectives of all disparate stakeholders, we feel this legislation represents the strong consensus of the Oregon wine industry and is a much-needed improvement to current law. Some key features of the bill include creating two new winery-sized tiers and clarifying the appropriate activities and events that are allowed for each category. We have added a small winery tier in order to take care of a very difficult problem within the industry, small wineries on small parcels. Many of today's most important wineries began on small sites and have since grown. We think it is important to create an outright permitted route for these wineries. We also recognize that there's much concern within the industry, and by interested parties that these small wineries can be an avenue for people who are not serious about having a winery but merely want a small event center on EFD land. For this reason, we have added the minimum 20-acre tract size for these small wineries. Our bill also adds a fourth winery tier for those that produce more than 150,000 gallons, among other things. This provision in our bill mirrors provisions contained in HB 3280 and SB 829, both of which had already passed the House and the Senate. Our bill authorizes full-service restaurants at these large wineries. We clarify in our bill that the wineries are still allowed to sell wine and other incidental items that are subordinate to winemaking. We also clarify that wineries can do activities and events that relate to marketing and promotion of wine. We also say if a winery wishes to do certain events, namely weddings or similar celebratory events, outdoor concerts, and private facility rentals, it must be subject to additional review by counties to mitigate off-site impacts and address compatibility with local farming. The results would be a county issuing a multi-year temporary permit to a winery for these types of events. We make it clear that a kitchen is considered to be a normal part of a winery. However, we also make it clear that wineries not in the fourth tier are not allowed to become restaurants or cafes with menu options offered. We retain the incidental income limit of 25% for on-site retail sales, so controls are in place to prevent businesses using the winery statute from becoming wedding or event centers. Finally, we recognize that some grandfathering is necessary. We have a provision that establishes clear legality for existing wineries that build a business relying on a permit they received from a local government, which was legal at the time of issuance. Thank you for hearing HB 3280 today. You have before you -10 amendments that need further revisions. We look forward to working with you in the coming days to produce an amended version of HB 3280 that modernizes our permitted use winery statute. After the two other speakers speak, I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have. And
thank you.
Rest assured, they're going to be a little shorter than me.
Maybe. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cara Olmo, and I'm an owner of Woldridge Creek Winery, which is located in the Applegate Valley in Jackson County of Southern Oregon. I'm also a board member of the Oregon Wine Growers Association and an active member of the Southern Oregon Winery Association. And I'm here today to support the Oregon Wine Growers Association and the -10 amendments and assure you that these amendments are the result of over a year-long statewide process that does have great industry support, and that these amendments will ensure that our industry has the platform to grow in a thoughtful and concise manner that's reflective of the Oregon wine industry. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Dingfelder, I'm Alex Sokolblosser. My sister, we run my family's business, Sokolblosser Winery. I'm also president of the Willamette Valley Wineries Association. Initially, when this bill came out, many of our members had some issues with it, but working with the OWA, we came to some consensus, and I really think this is a great testament to consensus building and compromising in the Oregon wine industry. And while, as Sam said, it may not fill the bill for everybody, I think it is it's the compromise and the consensus that we're able to build with most of the industry that's important. So I'm excited about what we have here, and it'll help take the wine industry into the next 20, 30 years. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for any of these panel members? Senator Thompson.
I just have a couple of little statements. I think correct me if I'm wrong, the intent of this bill is to grandfather existing wineries who are acting in good faith with approved land use decisions from their counties.
Chair,
that includes permits and conditional use permits.
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Thompson, yes, anything that we wanted to, the intent was to make anything that was permitted before to remain as a permitted use for those wineries going forward.
I'm not sure.
Follow up.
I'm not sure, and I don't think it was the intent of this, but there doesn't seem to resolve any of the winery issues that are in maybe farm, forest, or mixed land uses. I just wanted to get on record the related because of the relating clause in this bill is to wineries on EFU land only.
Yep.
So there could be some issues later, but that when we can look
that's,
at that.
That's correct,
time.
Senator.
Thank you.
Chair.
There were some questions about wineries that were on farm forest land, and due to the relating clause, we were informed that that would not fit.
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Thompson, that issue has just come up before us very recently, and you have my personal commitment and the commitment of the OWA and the Willamette Valley Wineries Association that we're going to work very hard to resolve some of those issues as soon as we can get to it. It's an important issue. Thank you for bringing it to our, keeping it on the record.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions?
I have a question. Are all the wine groups now together behind this, or are we still a little bit factioned?
Our Willamette Valley Winery Association, where a majority of the wineries in Oregon are, yes. Again, it's not a perfect coalition, but a unanimous coalition, but it's, as I told Sam, we've got about 60-70% of our group, of our board, approved and worked hard to get to this compromise, which I think from when it comes to land use, it's pretty dang good.
Follow up. On the 60-70%, the 30% that are not happy with it, is there any one issue that bothers them the most?
The 30%, these I would think it's mainly the people who are on the extreme of wanting unlimited to do whatever they want in EFU land, and those who want nothing to be allowed in EFU land. So we weren't able to have a compromise to satisfy those people who I love and respect. They're my industry mates. But, you know, this is all about compromise. The industry's grown so much over the past 40 years that to get 60-70% of land use again, I thought was pretty good.
One more fellow. Anybody down south, is there any considerations down there for problems?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, thank you. There certainly, again, we'll have people both on the, don't we even believe wineries should be on EFU as commercial activity, who have wineries on EFU. So we do have members of our industry who do not believe in commercial activity on EFU, sometimes even including the manufacturing of wine. And we also have industry members who believe that they should be able to run 500 weddings a year on EFU without on a permitted use pathway. That said, I was at a Southern Oregon Winery Association-sponsored trade tasting just about 3 weeks ago. We had maybe 40 wineries represented mainly by principals. In that hour-and-a-half time frame, I was able to get at least 35 signatures supporting these concepts with 10 minutes of explanation each. So there's great, great support from the southern part of the state.
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, I'd like to answer that as well. I believe that perhaps, though I'm not as bold as Alex to put a percent on there, I believe that most people that are perhaps have some issues with this bill haven't been explained, haven't had the whole bill explained to them. I was on the phone down here talking to a winery owner for half an hour, and once I got off the phone, he said, no problem, sounds great. So I think that that's the main issue as opposed to any true opposition. There will always be some people on the extremes that will see some pushback and some opposition there, but I would be relatively safe to say it's in the extreme minority of the industry.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Okay, we have some other folks like to come testify on this bill. Tim Ramey, Eric Rogers, and I'm just calling up by listing, Steve McCoy. Doesn't mean you're affiliated or on the same side of the issue. Okay, Ms. Ramey, would you like to go first?
Yes. Chair Dingfelder, committee. I represent, my name is Tim Ramey, and I represent Zenith Vineyard, a winery and dreaded wedding and events facility in Polk County. And I too would say that the industry has worked very hard on this A10 amendment. I was not in support of the board's position 2 or 3 weeks ago, but I think the board has really found some good common ground with this, and particularly speaking very parochially about my interests, the grandfather clause does, I think, assure that businesses that have legally invested in the past and have permits to do what they're doing are going to be allowed to continue to carry out their business plan. And so with that provision in place, Zenith Vineyard supports this A10 amendment.
Thank you.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Eric Rogers. I'm the CFO at Eola Hills Wine Cellars. We're kind of renegades in this business. We don't belong to a lot of the organizations that are represented and that drafted this bill, although we very much appreciate all the effort that went into drafting this. We find ourselves in kind of a unique position. We've been an established winery for over 25 years. We're in the top 10 producers in the state of Oregon. Our winery is sited on commercial land at the present time in Rickrell. About 3 years ago, we invested and purchased a large tract of land, 160 acres, in the Eola Hills, and have spent a considerable amount of money developing that property for vineyard, as well as with the concept of utilizing that land for event venues, in addition to a winery being established there in the future. Again, under the laws that were written and in place at the time, this was perfectly permitted and legitimate. We did seek and have obtained a change of land zoning to farm forest, and I just heard referenced, this bill is exclusively dedicated towards EFU land. It would be of great interest to us to find out what the impact is going to be if this bill is adopted, and what impact that will have on the farm forest usage. In that, again, our intent, and we've invested over $5 million in this development in the last 3 years, and we already have a producing winery. This bill, if we wanted to comply and get to level four, we'd have to duplicate that winery size on a piece of property that we feel is more suited to growing grapes and holding events. With a small winery in place, rather than having to reestablish a 150,000-gallon-plus winery. So I'm here really, I marked on my thing, I'm unsure as to how this bill will affect us, but I'm very interested in finding out what the farm-forest EFU crossover will be in the future. So with that, thank you.
Thank you. And we have the Department of Land Conservation Development here, and I probably will ask them to come up and try to answer that question. Steve.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, I am Steve McCoy, representing 1,000 Friends of Oregon in opposition to HB 3280 with the A10 amendments. I'll take a crack at that one. First of all, farm and forest, you can do the same things that you can do on EFU and farm and forest under OAR 660-006-005-02 sub 2. It essentially says if you have a farm and forest track, you're allowed to do the things that you can do on EFU on farm and forest. I know that there is someone out there that wants to do these same things on forest, and in that case, there would have to be some legislation for that. But it's in rule already that you can do on farm and forest what you can do on EFU. Taking the bill as it is with the A10s, I understand that there are going to be A11s at some point, and we would love to participate in the crafting of those. The A10s are our last-minute sweeping changes. There are multiple errors in there, we feel. They are done without stakeholder buy-in. There has been buy-in somewhat within the wine industry, however, outside the wine industry, not as much. We feel like that the food service that's allowed is too expansive. While it does say that you cannot have a restaurant or a cafe, anything up to a restaurant or cafe would be allowed. For example, you could have a nice wood-fired pizza oven and serve pizza with your wine tasting. You could charge more for the pairing of the wine and pizza than you would just for the wine, for example. Or you could have winemaker dinners and lunches every weekend if you wanted to, because, you know, by appointment only does not look like a restaurant, so that would fit in under this bill. It has a 25% cap on these incidental things. However, it's unclear what's in the numerator and the denominator of that 25%. So, for example, if you did pizza and wine pairings, would that be in the numerator of that 25% or in the denominator? Since that's not clear, we don't really know what the 25% means. On top of that, there's no reporting requirement other than if the county requests to show that a winery is in compliance with the 25%. So that's another concern. We don't know. Will there be really no way to enforce that? And also we're concerned about allowing the very small wineries, the ones with 5 acres planted, to have events and activities essentially at them, as well as food service. Thank you.
Any questions for any of these witnesses? Any questions?
Yes.
We've lost some of our members here.
Mr. McCoy, were you involved in the writing of these amendments?
Not in the A-10s, no. We were involved in discussions with the winemakers, with the Willamette Valley winemakers in the past. However, whenever the process kind of collapsed down to just the OWA and the Willamette Valley winemakers, we were no longer included.
So you basically oppose these because you don't want the expansion into the EFUs of these restaurants and things like that?
Correct.
Okay.
Okay. Did you have a question, Senator Brzezinski? No. Okay. All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Why don't we have the department come up next, and you can try to answer the question, and we could test to see if Steve McCoy answered the question correctly.
You can actually charge for his answer.
Right.
Yeah.
These attorneys, you know.
Madam Chair and committee members, I'm Michael Morsi, a DLCDM, a policy analyst. I'm not sure I can give a better answer than Steve gave. For some purposes, land that is zoned farm forest may be treated as farmland if the predominant use as of a certain date was farmland and as forest if it was used as forest state. In this particular application, I can't really give you a clear enough answer, and it may need some further research. I know there is a bill that is alive or had a hearing recently that did try to introduce wineries and allowed use in forest zones. This isn't that. I guess my informal sense is I would have thought that the way the relating clause was worded did capture farm forest, but without some further research, I can't give you a definitive answer.
If you could get back to us,
I'll be glad to do that.
That would be helpful.
That's right.
Any questions for the department? Otherwise... Okay. Did you want to test?
Well,
to
I did sign up.
And
all I was going to say is we did not also participate, our department, in these A-10s. We knew that discussions were happening. The department has participated in earlier versions of the whole winery problem and solution, frankly, going back to involvement with the Association of Oregon Counties process. And I guess I would say we still probably have some concerns. I just saw these very recently with some of the events language and activities. Other than that, we've checked neutral on there, and that's where we are until we hear more. And I understand there is going to be more discussion, and perhaps we can participate in that.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Michael. We have Jim Bruneau, and then Art Schlack and Stephen Gaffori. Why don't you guys all come up? See if there's other more people. Okay. Okay, whoever wants to go first.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Jim Bruneau. I'm the founder, president of Willamette Valley Vineyards. This committee, through Senate Bill 829, developed a powerful idea, and that was a vision for growth in our industry. You know the 1989 law that was passed by this legislature spawned and grew a remarkable industry in agriculture that was very small prior to the passage of that law. What this bill does is provide an additional pathway for growth for four tiers. The idea in 829 was an additional third tier. This drafting is actually an improvement on that idea. Now, the issue of kitchens has been raised, and I keep reminding the testifiers that in 1989, lawmakers inserted language into the winery statute that provided for a limited service restaurant privilege, and at that time included the preparation of a raw or fresh item, which required a kitchen. Now, in the 2001 session, the lawmakers changed the definition based upon the inspection requirements of the health inspectors, but did grandfather in the uses that the 1989 law passed for the Oregon legislature. So when I testified previously, all Ed King was really asking was that he be able to serve more than one fresh item, prepare more than one fresh or raw item. Not a significant change. There are many, many wineries in Oregon that have developed very strong and powerful marketing plans for their wines based upon the idea of presenting those wines with food. So I hope you make sure that we continue to have this ability and develop it properly for our industry. I urge adoption of these amendments along with some refinements that are needed.
Okay. Thank you, Jim. Any questions for Mr. Brunel?
Yes.
Mr. Brunel, do you think it is a fundamental function of your winery to be able to provide food to accommodate those people coming to see your products?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, wine, in a sense, is a food, and it accompanies a meal. And in our industry in Oregon, we grow wine in small quantities of very high quality. And so our wine is best presented with food. And it shows its attributes. And that's how the consumer uses the product when they go home with it. Our wines are fairly expensive and are really food-oriented wines. So it's an absolute fundamental requirement for our success. And in fact, since 1989, we've used it very well. Ed King being the best example of how it can be used.
So basically then what you're saying is this really enhances your ability to conduct business and employ people and sell your product.
Absolutely.
Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Thank you.
Art. Senator Dingfelder, members of the committee, my name is Art Slack. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties. And as you know, as I've testified in before you on another bill at this point, the Association of Oregon Counties has spent about two years looking at the question or the issues related to events and activities on farmland, and that discussion has also dealt with events and activities that are taking place at wineries at this point. We had a task force that looked at these issues. You saw the task force report and held a public hearing, and so you know at least some of the issues and concerns that counties have with respect to events and activities on farmland that deal with public health, public safety. They deal with compatibility in the area and the community at this point. These issues relate to not only events and activities generally on farmland, but also events and activities that take place at wineries at this point. The Association of Oregon Counties is not so concerned in saying you can't do something, but actually looking at how you can do something and ensuring that there is a public process with some discretion at the local level to take a look at those activities and to put some, if you will, some sideboards and some requirements around those that these activities are good neighbors and are conducted in a fair and equitable manner. That being said, Madam Chair, the Association of Oregon Counties has been involved with the Oregon Wineries Association representatives for since the beginning of the year. Well, actually, they were members of our task force. They had representation on our task force. So we've been involved with about a year and a half with them dealing with these kinds of issues, and in fact spent in a very intensive 3 months of the three, 4 months of the beginning of this session trying to hammer out something that could go into one bill rather than have separate bills dealing with events and activities on farmland and then wineries in a separate piece of legislation. Unfortunately, because of conflicts and issues at this point, that the legislature is not going to see it presented in that way. I'm glad to hear that the Winery Association is still working on some amendments. There are some concerns and issues that need to be addressed in our estimation still. We look forward to being able to address some of those issues which we feel are vitally important to have this piece of legislation go forward at this point. So with that, and I would just note that we have not been part of the Winery Association's discussion to bringing the winery associations together at this point. So this is, while we've seen bits and pieces, this is the first time we've seen it in writing at this point. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions at the appropriate time.
Thank you. Stephen?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Gaffori. I'm representing the Oregon chapter of the American Planning Association. You may recall that the wine industry really owes its existence in the state of Oregon to the land use planning, the bill that we passed in 1973. It allowed land to be preserved for growing grapes. That land that otherwise could have been developed into houses or other kinds of uses. We also support the proper use of non-farm use activities on wine lands. We think that the use of wineries properly sideboarded, as Art Schlack said, is very good for Oregon, good for the wines, and good for the public. We do have concerns about this bill. We are not ready to support the bill yet at this time, Madam Chair. Many of our concerns are very technical in nature and I think can be resolved if we sit down together, which we have scheduled. Some of them are policy-oriented and will require some discussions as well.
Any questions? Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Anybody else would like to testify on House Bill 3280A? Okay, seeing none. We will close the public hearing on House Bill 3280A. We will open up our next public hearing on House Bill 2130A. Beth, if you can provide us with an overview.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2130A clarifies the statute relating to the Department of Land Conservation and Development reviewing local decisions.
Hold on. Why don't we let everybody go out so we can continue our hearing? Thank you.
There is in your packets a dash A11 amendment that I believe the department will speak to. We don't yet have the fiscal or revenue statement on those dash A11 amendments.
Okay. Bob? Rindy? There you go.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Bob Rindy with the Department of Land Conservation and Development. House Bill 2130 is DLCD legislation, and as you just heard, it streamlines and clarifies the process for periodic review, and especially, because this was our primary focus, for the review of urban growth boundary amendments. All cities in Oregon are surrounded by an urban growth boundary, and many of those urban growth boundaries were initially approved in the early to mid-1980s, and we're at a stage right now when there's a lot of jurisdictions that are contemplating or in the process of amending urban growth boundaries. The authority to review urban growth boundary amendments was, or at least larger amendments, was transferred from Land Use Board of Appeals, or LUBA, to LCDC in 1998. However, the procedures, many of the statutory procedures that LUBA has for review of these urban growth boundary amendments were not transferred to LCDC, and this has been continued to be a growing problem as urban growth boundary amendments are controversial, they're complex, and there has been a growing need for more clarity, both in the process of LCDC review and the later review at the courts of these decisions. And I think there have been many unnecessary appeals and uncertainty as a result of that. House Bill 2130A includes various changes to improve and streamline LCDC's review of UGB amendments, urban reserve decisions, and periodic review. And this bill does provide additional certainty for local governments where there's has been a lack of clarity in the past. Early versions of this bill would have also streamlined the process of Court of Appeals review of UGB decisions. This is something that there is a streamlined procedure for certain land use decisions and some UGB decisions, but by and large, decisions made that are approved by LCDC in the manner of periodic review are not streamlined. We weren't able to work out the fiscal impacts of that, so that has been removed from the bill. That's one of the important changes from the original bill and the Dash A version. But we think the remaining provisions are very important. They will be helpful to us in the future as we go forward reviewing UGB amendments and for other aspects of periodic review. And so we urge you to pass this bill. With that, I'm going to stop here. I know I've been really brief, but I know you have a lot on your agenda. I'll be happy to answer questions.
Bob, I have a question. So the Dash A11s, this is the final amendment that you're talking about. We just don't have the fiscal on this at that time. Is that correct?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay. I do think this language is a lot clearer than what's in current
statute.
So
do we.
But I just wanted to check then at this point, came over with only one no vote, huh? Interesting. So we'll have to go back for concurrence. Okay, so any questions? Yeah, I think this language is much better than it's in current statute, but okay. Nobody else has signed up to speak on this, so I guess at this point we'll wait to get the fiscal back, and then we'll need to carry over the work session, which I will do. I'll do that at the end. Let me see if anybody else would like to testify on House Bill. You could stay there because you're also up for the next one. Anybody else like to testify on House Bill 2130A? Okay, with that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2130A, and I'll just list all the work sessions that we're going to carry over at the end. And then I'll open up a public hearing on House Bill 2131A. And Beth?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2131A would modify the criteria for reviewing housing needs within an urban growth boundary. There was a minimal fiscal impact, so no statement and no revenue impact.
Okay, so 2131A, can I see who else is signed up? Okay, Bob and then John Chandler. So Bob, why don't you get started and John Chandler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, for the record, I'm Bob Rindy with the Department of Land Conservation and Development, and I'll try and be very brief here as well. The state laws that we're addressing here under ORS 197-303 to 307 were enacted way back, I think, in 1980 to ensure that local governments plan and zone sufficient land for development of needed housing. And this string of statutes, especially the provisions we're addressing today, are intended to prevent regulatory barriers by local governments or land use planners or others to the development of needed housing. I think these requirements were very clear at the beginning. It's striking to look at the original version of these statutes, just two sections of statutes just laid out by themselves. Over the ensuing years, many, many amendments, additions, changes have been made to this string of statutes. And I think there's many folks that we have worked with on this legislation that agree that it's no longer abundantly clear what some of this means. There are provisions that are duplicative or even possibly conflicting, and other things that are unclear. So what we've attempted to do with this legislation, and I think we've got concurrence from many that we've succeeded, is to make these statutes more clear, to try to correct some of the problems people have had with interpretation, and to try to make it a consistent whole in a policy-neutral manner. We are not trying to change this policy. We are trying to make sure that it clearly expresses the original intent, an intent that has been very controversial at times, and but also very helpful to the development of needed housing. This provision, at the very beginning of this statute, you see a very minor amendment to reporting requirements about needed housing as well, just to authorize electronic reporting, but we think, again, something very important to do. We would like to see more and better reporting by local governments. The provision that's affected by Section 1 has not been followed by many local governments. We want to make it more affordable if possible, but we do want to continue to pay attention to that. So again, in the interest of time, I'll stop there. I'll be happy to answer questions.
Okay, thank you, Bob. Why don't we hear from Mr. Chandler, and then we'll see if the dynamic duo, we might have some questions for them.
Madam Chair, member of the committee.
You see, Bob.
I'm Batman. For the record,
we need
Batman.
A little levity here.
John Chandler, Oregon Homeowners Association. And I'm actually more of a Marvel Comics guy than a DC. Anyway, we have nothing to add. It's a good bill. We appreciate it very much. I just want to put on the record the department put a lot of time into the work group on this, as did other members of the land use community in Oregon. I think what you have in front of you is a good piece of legislation. It is policy neutral. It does reaffirm the very important policies of, in Oregon about needed housing and removing barriers there, too. We commend it to you. We're glad to take questions. Oh, and I should mention today is Bob Dylan's 70th birthday. And it hasn't yet come up today, as I've heard, and it should be commented.
That's a very important thing.
It is.
I know you said that. All right. With all levity here, we need a little levity around here. Any questions?
Levity. Levity? It's about a religion.
Thank you very much.
I think you've made my committee speechless, which doesn't happen very often. So no questions.
Well, I'd ask a question, but I don't know which one is Robin and which one is Batman.
Well, we've already heard.
Batman, he's Robin.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Go for it. We'll see how they respond.
Yeah.
No, I have no questions.
Okay. All right. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll see if anybody else wants to testify on this. Otherwise, I think we are ready to take action. Anybody else like to testify on House Bill 2131A? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2131A. We actually do have all the paperwork that we need for this. Is that correct? So we will go ahead and open up a work session on House Bill 2131A, and I will take a motion.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2131A to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Senator also moves House Bill 2131A to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Senator
Hatch? Aye.
Senator
Kozlowski?
Aye.
Senator Thompson?
Aye.
Senator Olson?
Aye.
Chair Dingfelder?
Aye. Motion carries, and since I don't see anybody jumping up and down to carry this bill, the chair will carry it. With that, we will close the work session on House Bill 2131A, and we will open up our last hearing of the day, which is House Bill 2753. Beth, if you can provide us with an overview, please.
Madam Chair, members, House Bill 2753 would extend the sunset date for authorization of guest ranches from 2012 to 2018. There is a dash one amendment in your packet that I believe Jonathan Manton will speak to.
Is Representative Clem?
I texted him.
Okay. So, Jonathan, why don't you come up? You're the only one signed up on this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
If Representative Clem comes running through the door. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jonathan Manton, and I'm testifying today on behalf of Central Oregon Land Watch. I just want to speak to these Dash 1 amendments to this bill. It came to my attention relatively late in the process that during previous conversations of this overall guest ranch reform and negotiations that I think took place in the interim and even probably in sessions past, and in some of those conversations, there was agreed upon language to insert language that would say that some areas that have already been designated by the federal government as wilderness or wilderness study areas would not be appropriate for siting of a guest ranch. And the amendment speaks of, I can just give you a quick update on it. It says generally that the under these provisions, approval or siting standards of a county, a guest ranch may be established in an area of eastern Oregon that is zoned for exclusive farm use, and then the amendments would say, unless the proposed site of the guest ranch is within the boundaries of or surrounded by federally designated wilderness or wilderness study area, federally designated wildlife refuge, federally designated area of critical environmental concern, or an area established by an act of Congress for the protection of the scenic ecological resources. So there are some private inholdings that are either surrounded by or already within these federally designated areas. And thus, we would be bringing this amendment to your attention to see if we can add it to the bill. And as I stated, it was agreed upon by the people in the work group in the past, and I'm not aware of any opposition to this language.
Okay. Thank you, Jonathan. And are there any questions for Jonathan on the amendment? Or on the, it's not his bill, but on the amendment to the original bill? So my understanding is Representative Clem's support. These are consensus amendments.
My understanding is they're consensus amendments. I don't want to speak for Representative Clem.
Okay.
I've spoken to the proponents.
So maybe what we'll do is,
reform.
Since Representative Clem isn't here, I'd like to hold this over so we can get it on the record. You guys are okay with that? And make sure, because I haven't talked to him directly about this. So there's no questions at this time. We'll go ahead and close the public hearing, unless anybody else would like to come testify. I'm waiting to see if it's... No, it's not Representative Clem. With that, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2753. And, colleagues, that's all that we have on the agenda, but I do have to make some announcements about what we are carrying over. So we have House Bill 3591A, which we will carry over to 531, May 31, next Tuesday. House Bill 3280... is also going to be carried over to 531 next Tuesday. House Bill 2130A is carried over for a work session until Thursday, May 26. This one we passed, and House Bill 2753 we will carry over to 526 as well. Did I get everything?
I should do it.
All right. With that, we are adjourned until Thursday.